While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon to you, Namibia, and welcome to Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and this is On The Radar News Analysis. It is Wednesday, the 28th of January, 2026, and the time is 5 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. Now, as the nation continues through the week, public attention remains focused on how decisions taken today are shaping economic stability, service delivery, and overall quality of life. Now, across government, business, and communities, questions of accountability, performance, and long-term planning continue to define the national conversation. Key issues such as economic resilience, infrastructure reliability, food and water security, public safety, and community well-being remain at the forefront, influencing both public confidence and policy direction. Now, On The Radar News Analysis provides the space to examine this development with clarity and context. Here, we go beyond the headlines to assess national and regional events, their implications, and their relevance to everyday life in Namibia. From 1300 hours to 1430 Monday through Friday, we deliver credible journalism, informed perspectives, and balanced analysis grounded in facts and lived realities. Now, on today's programs, of course, we'll focus on the developments shaping the day, including emerging economic signals, pressures within public service delivery, evolving agricultural and water security concerns, and matters of community concern. You are tuned into, pardon me, you can listen to all Eagle FM listen on all Eagle FM frequencies, stream us live via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app and stay connected through our WhatsApp channel for updates and audience engagement. This is On The Radar News Analysis. Now let's begin with today's top stories. As global diamond markets face mounting pressure from synthetic alternatives and intensified international competition, uranium has continued to assert itself as one of Namibia's most resilient and strategic export commodities. Now, of course, in 2025, uranium maintained its position among Namibia's top three export commodities. That is according to the Namibia Statistics Agency recent bulletin for the month of November 2025 in review. Now, joining me in studio to speak about this is my colleague David Shombe to help unpack it. A very good afternoon to you, David Shombe, and welcome to On The Radar in this 2026 for the first time.
Yeah, thank you, Juju. Thank you for having me. Good afternoon to our listeners. And it's quite, a pleasure for me to be here in your show.
Shombe, it's always a pleasure to have you because yeah. I know you don't like to be put on the spot, but I know you're an analyst yourself.
Yeah.
You analyze so many things.
Yeah.
So we're talking about uranium having emerged or has been now for a couple of time, as a trading commodity for Namibia, as opposed to, diamonds. Let's get into that.
Yeah, thank you once again. Looking at uranium in Namibia, first, one thing that we need to put in mind is that being a country in Southern Africa is not only about the wealth of resources that we have,
mm-hmm.
but it's also about the uniqueness that that resources we have. Because if you look at the ranking of top producers of uranium in the world, we are not in the top four, not in the top five, but in the top three, because we are second to Canada. And in that aspect, it also tells you a lot to say it's not even any other country in the world that can compete with us, particularly in the production of uranium.
Interesting.
But what it's also telling you is that it's one of the minerals that is in demand currently,
mm-hmm.
because powerful nations are using it as their strategic. It's a strategic, demand, especially when you have it But one thing you also need to look at it is also the use of it and why it is in demand. Number one is electricity. Number two, it can be used if it's is more enriched to that aspect of powerful rockets, even atomic bombs. But we are not going into that area.
Yeah.
But looking at uranium, especially when it comes to generation of electricity,
mm-hmm.
is one of the things that has been spoken about since 1990 to say, why can't Namibia enter that space? Because that is the only thing that we have. But Juju, the interesting thing also about minerals is that they don't stay there forever.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a time where you think to say, for the past 50 years, we have been dominating, but things are depreciating, things are going down, and also even mines have lifespan. In those days when we were growing up, we used to think CDM was the top notch. If somebody's working at uranium at that time,
yeah.
they were kings. But now, things mm-hmm. have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a natural diamond those years, it was number one. But,
yeah.
You know, due to technology, things have changed now.
Yeah.
But what it's also telling me...
Before you go further,
yeah.
specifically, you say due to technology,
yeah.
are you referring because diamonds now are lab-grown? We have lab-grown diamonds,
yeah.
which is also a thing that Botswana is struggling with,
yeah.
with their diamond, you know? And,
yeah.
And I think this emphasizes on your point that you're making that minerals don't stay
forever. Yeah.
In other words, another mineral will then take center stage
yeah.
alongside with time.
That is exactly what is happening. But I think it's now the right time for our country. It's telling us a lot to say mm-hmm. if we continue to maintain this. Because it's not only about the latest international trade bulletins.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about the trend that has been set. If I have to take you 3 years ago,
yeah.
looking at the trade balance, you realize that in the top three or top four of Namibia export is uranium. Where do we sell the uranium? 80% of that, we sell it to a very good brother. That is China
yeah.
and also France. How do they, what do they use it? They do not have large, portions of uranium. But when you look at World Nuclear Association, it's indicating that it's within the Chinese national strategy to make sure that they contain or they have... The third of uranium imported from outside world, and also to make sure that they use it not only for their electricity, but it has other use, even in terms of medication.
Mm-hmm.
You speak about carbon dating. You speak about the geological aspect.
Mm.
It's in line with where we want to get. But the problem is, how long are we going to be in this? Because you already have a plan. I was listening to, I have a document.
Mm-hmm.
That is a speech of our Bazandakaire Mwende. He's it's a DG for National Planning Commission.
Yeah.
When he was speaking at World Economic Forum, he indicated that we have a strategy. We have a national strategy of utilization of uranium into energy products. And it's quite a very good thing. But the problem is, for how long? How long is it going to take? What is the investment? Or do we still have... to go and look for outside investors, and what is the progress of, or is just an ambition which is there. So it's quite interesting to look in that ground.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, of course, you make it so clear there that uranium remains one of the world's most strategic minerals.
Yeah,
Shombe, playing a central role in global energy systems, medical technology, and national security, while also serving as a key economic driver for major producing countries now, such as Namibia.
Yeah.
Now, this mineral is naturally occurring and is a radioactive metal primarily
yeah.
used as fuel in nuclear power generation. I know we spoke about maybe not getting too technically in that.
Yeah.
Do you think perhaps this could also position Namibia in terms of investor attraction, not for something that is good, but for nuclear weapons? I mean, that's what the world is looking at now. I mean, could we perhaps attract to us Iran or whatsoever, now wanting to look to Namibia and say, give us your uranium, we'll pay you so much money
so that
we can use it for
some sort of... That is it's quite a very interesting question, and looking into that aspect, because when you look at the usage of uranium, number one, you can use it for good reason. That is number one.
Mm-hmm.
And what you are using it is up to the country that is buying from you. Mm-hmm. But if you are using it for nuclear stuff, that is not what where the world is going. Yeah. The world is going toward self-generation of energy. And when you speak about investment, yeah. Juju, we are rich.
Yeah.
But we are not able yet to utilize those wealthy, because you know why? We are not, and I'm speaking this with much respect. It's mm-hmm. like we are not long-term thinkers, because we want to do something that can only benefit me or my kid for now. But if you speak about investing in uranium plant, let me say I'm going to eat that fruit mm-hmm. maybe when I'm 50 years old mm-hmm. and my children will be, in that space where you are not generating 60% of electricity outside the country.
Yeah.
Juju, imagine you don't have electricity that you are producing, but you are number top 5 in the world in terms of the main thing.
Yeah.
And you also do not have, yet you can't determine the price of oil, although you have oil and you have also the neighbor who is selling oil. Maybe something that we really need to rethink of, but being at that top 5,
mm-hmm.
Being at that top 5 of export, I think it will position Namibia, and let us hope that, and it's my wish that our 8th administration will do something different that was never done,
mm-hmm.
especially from the past administration. Either to lay the foundation, because we don't want it in the next 5 years. We want progress in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think perhaps, of course, I know that Namibia has switched or is moving away from sort of like foreign-dominated careers here in Namibia, mm-hmm. and trying to shift those ones to the Namibians. Of course, not being xenophobic in that aspect, but I think I would say they're quite balancing it well from the angle that I'm looking at. But do you think at this point maybe this is the time to now call in mm-hmm. Experts from other countries to come and teach us on certain things? Like, for instance, I mean, when you don't really know something, you look onto you to your neighbors to say, come and help me do this.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, you know, when we say, let's get the Chinese to come and teach our contractors, our road contractors on how to properly construct a road, then obviously your hands will be applauding on that. Do you think maybe perhaps we can also then look into bringing analysts, or bringing in, not necessarily analysts, but bringing in expertise, the right people, experts in terms of uranium, to come and teach us how to really do value addition to uranium?
No, I think that is a very good question. And one thing that should be emphasized is that what has been our focus when we go outside the world? Because the aim of you, Juju, going to represent Namibia in UK, in China, is to go there and tell these people that we have these resources, but what we want from you is not really about money. We want skills so that we can stand on our own. For how long we have been a friend of our good friend China?
Yeah.
They have the best engineers in the world, best architecture. They have they are advanced in terms of technology. And the question is that what are we negotiating? What is coming from there? Last year, when President Bumba was still the president at the beginning of the year, we received I think worth of 50 million rice. But that we are not supposed to get rice from there. Although it was a really good help, we were supposed to get better skilled people.
Thank you.
That can assist us. Because if I'm the best in the world in terms of my resources,
mm-hmm.
why can't you teach me? Even to make my own electricity, I'm not buying electricity from you.
Yeah.
But maybe it's also the time now to look at the real skills that will be needed in terms of long term. Imagine if this should have been, started during the administration of Thaddeus Nyoma. We wouldn't, by now, we would be standing on our own in terms of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe powering the whole of Sandek. Because I was speaking to one scientist to say a box of this size, I don't know how we are going to explain it to, the listeners.
A fist.
Yeah, can power the whole Namibia of uranium.
Mm-hmm.
But you know how many metric tons are we exporting per year? Over 5,000 metric tons. And you need to think about that. So I think now, looking at that, it's not something to complain about, but something that maybe can open our eyes and see what we can do in terms of long term when it comes to the utilization of our natural resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shambe, allow me to take you to something else similar to what we're just speaking on now. And it got triggered by what you just mentioned.
Mm.
You know, this the statistics bulletin, okay, the Namibia statistics bulletin on November 2025 also revealed or identified rice as the commodity of the month, and showing that Namibia imported rice valued at 31 million Namibian dollar, mainly from Thailand and South Africa, and no rice exports were recorded during November 2025. In other words, rice worth 31 million Namibian dollars came into the country, and then no rice actually went out of the country in that particular month. Yeah. So we're talking about China. We're still having China in the conversation now, in the aspect now, in the picture now. Now, China is known for its rice. You know, it's known for producing rice.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, every now and then we're engaging, pardon me, with the Chinese.
Yeah.
And I think, speaking another correction, New Dam Campers, was also then, looking into rice production or did rice production.
Yeah.
But then how far are we with such things? We're talking about unemployment. These are the things that we should be looking at, looking at people to come and educate us on things that we should, do better ourselves so that then we can benefit not just for the house itself, by the house I'm referring to the country in America, but then for us also to be able to export, you know?
Yeah. No, Juju, that is, it's a very interesting thing, because if I have to take you back to early 2000, if I have to take you to early 2000, then you look, at, the administration of, our late founding father, may he so rest in peace. He was known to be a project man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a founder of, not only a founder of Namibia, but he's also, you know, a project man who established the green schemes that we are discussing about today.
Mm-hmm.
But his aim was not only about Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
His aim was to, if you are able to feed yourself, nobody can be able to control you. Do you know, Juju, if I just have to be honest with you, if the borders of South Africa close for 2 weeks, just 2 weeks, I know you love shopping for your family, you'll be the first person to call
me.
You'll be the first person to call me, because you realize that 80% of the things that you find in the market are not produced in Namibia. But I think maybe it's now the time that we realize to say food production should not only be a discussion when you have platform, but when we are doing things. Because, you know, I was reading a master thesis on one lady really wrote a very beautiful master thesis from UNAM, saying about MBA in natural resource something. Then out of that, she stated that Kavango East is the poorest region, but it contained over 60% of our green schemes in Namibia. Now, the question that somebody may ask is that, how do we track progress in our green scheme? Because they are not only the main agriculture produce in Namibia, but how do we track progress? Do we have poor management? Are we using wrong seeds? Are we not prioritizing? Are we not using those machines correctly? We have wrong advisors. Because if you, Juju, you cannot track progress. We can speak as much as we want to speak. But if you don't have a plan that you will be able to track progress, then believe me, you will not get anywhere. Maybe let us hope, because so far, I've only received a report of two. I know Etunda have produced their statistic there. And last year, and I hope this year we are going to get statistics. Last year when Meme Shafunda presented the mid-year budget review, she only spoke about the two, but you don't only have two green schemes. Maybe
we have more.
We have more over. I think.
But then.
Then maybe in this point, maybe it's also a time to get to those data, because when you have data, you realize, you know, Juju only produced two bags of rice. What is the problem?
Yes.
Or David here at Uvunguvungu only produced five bags of potato. But Etunda produced maybe 20,000. Then we know where the problem is. But the food security, you know, we have a lot of things to do.
Quite interesting. Shombe.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think, you know, an idea is just coming to my mind as we are on the show right now.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, how do we get to hold our leaders really accountable in that aspect? Who then needs to, who do we need to ask questions in terms of those great ideas that, are always posted on here, right here on Eagle FM? I'm really, asking myself such questions.
And the other thing that you need to look at, when it's come to accountability is, the spirit of, coexistence. You know, when a politician is looking at private sector,
mm-hmm.
and is looking at media. You know, it's this perspective to say these guys are from this side or this other side. And it's also very difficult to find where the real problem is, because sometimes accountability may look like a threat to you,
mm-hmm.
Because you are a leader, I'm asking you a question. But the issue of coexistence, because somebody on the private sector can able to tell you that, Juju, what you are doing is right. You just need to progress this one.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody on the other side will also be able to recognize, no, at the policy level, we are here. But if you are operating at different frequency, then mm-hmm. you are saying you are moving toward the vision 2030,
mm-hmm.
but you are driving a bicycle to Okahanja. Me, I'm driving a truck facing Rehoboth. We are not going to reach that destination. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a spirit of coexistence, and also maybe to look at the studies, because data, they don't lie. If the studies are saying we have incoherence in institution, or there's no cooperation between academic institution, then you don't need to debate about it. You just need to see it at the beginning of the year where people are running this side. There is no enough school. The teachers are here and all these things where people are fighting on social media.
Yeah.
But we are already told to say there's no coherence between institution. There's no coherence between
And you remind me of something that the Minister of Information, Communication and Technology, Emma Tiofili, said.
Yeah.
She wants a system where she wants, the word is now rigging behind, where systems speak to each other,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
whereby I can go to the Namibian police now and, okay, maybe Namibian police is too much.
Yeah.
Let me say I will go to Home Affairs now and they need certain documents and they can request it from Home Affairs, or perhaps they log into a system whereby they'll be able to find, because these are government officials, all of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our information should be right, should be safe with them and accessible at that time. I don't have to run back home to go and get my full birth certificate, because at that moment I really need to use it, and I don't need to run and get it certified while they can just log into the system and see that it is certified with the Namibian police, you know?
Mm.
So yeah, you're making sense, yeah, right then.
You know, sometimes when you are saying you want, the question is, what are you doing?
You
know, even minister of, and there's something which I spoke about at the early morning scope to say, even minister of energy, industry, and mine stand up and say, we must end value to our minerals. Then you are asking yourself to say,
how?
Chief, you are sitting in cabinet. You have the power. The law is giving you this. Who is going to end? And when he stand up like this, then the mineral commissioner or somebody stand up and say, no, guys, we need to diversify our economy. If the governor of Bank of Namibia stand up and say, we need to diversify economy, we need to formalize the informacy. Then you're asking yourself now, who is going to do it if you are in charge? Because we keep on doing this. Even people who in parliament, they are saying we need to amend the laws. But what are you
doing? But you don't want to amend the law.
Yeah. And here we say we need to do these things. But I think it's also a matter of, I interview one very interesting guy, and I will keep on saying this. I think you may want him for life lesson. It's Ronald Akathingo,
mm-hmm.
the guy who came up with a very beautiful app. Then he's into this thing of mental health. He said, no, I was very tired of listening to people speaking about mental health, because I was also in that problem. He speak about it. He faced a lot of situations, dark situations. Then he stood up and said, no, let me write a book about mental health issues. Let me advise, let me come up with an app on reducing.
Let me bring a solution. So when someone is looking
because
for
if you just get a platform and you become a motivational speaker, Juju will not solve a problem.
Yeah, that's
true. And I think it's time now, maybe 2026, we are going to be more practical on things that we do.
Yeah.
And I really hope, especially with uranium, we are going to start now the groundwork, because we don't want to benefit. I don't think we are all going to benefit from it. But long term, at least there is going to be a foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike exporting over 5,000 metric tons to only few countries, even if you are leading, it's not correct.
Okay. And with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipuranenge lo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni mando tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM. The eye.
Okay, and we are back. Of course, now we joined in studio by Mr. Lysias Pius Arcadia. Pardon me, Mr. Lysias Pius. A very good afternoon, Mr. Lysias, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you, Gigi, for welcoming me. How are you? How's your afternoon?
I'm well, thank you. I almost introduce you with your company name as well. My colleague David Chombe is also online.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good. Hi. How are you, David?
I'm well.
I've listened to your part just now on the Eagle app.
Okay. Maybe we should start from there, Juju.
Yeah. Okay. Sir, of course, we're talking about uranium as a trading commodity now. It's a story that my colleague David Chombe wrote up in today's The Villager e-paper. Your contribution in this regard as on the benefits of uranium and how it's emerging?
Well, the benefits of uranium, I think, as a country, as we all know now, it's the biggest commodity that we export. It overtook diamonds. That's a good sign that Namibia is not only reliant on one commodity or on one item. Many countries, I think, in the world today are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
When they have been overly reliant on selling one product,
mm-hmm.
and one thing, anything happens to that specific product, so there's no market for it, then the country struggles, the GDP contribution goes down,
yeah.
And so forth. But in the Namibian context, There's quite a lot of benefits where the world is at now. I think one is energy security. As a country, I think we don't have energy security as yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. And many countries are starting to look at, you know, diversifying their energy sources, mostly moving away from fossil fuels to move towards to more sustainable ones like solar. But as you also know, solar is not very, it's not for a developing country.
Yeah.
It's not good enough for a developing country that wants to industrialize, that wants to build.
Mm.
So Namibia being the third largest producer in the world, and from an explorer's point of view, Namibia also has probably a couple of uranium deposits that are still yet to be discovered or still need to be confirmed and to be mined. It puts Namibia into a very good position when it comes to uranium, and it's a very good thing, really.
Indeed. Now, in terms of electricity, uranium, of course, can also be used in that aspect. Do you think perhaps we are still a long way from achieving that goal, or perhaps of us actually producing our own electricity using uranium, or maybe we are actually on our way there?
I think with the current government, I think in principle and what is being said, I think the talks are good. I think the fear of the usage of uranium is, you know, I think people are over that. I think we are getting there. I see there are now talks and there's engagements with uranium entities and countries that want to collaborate and set up you know, these modular plants, uranium plants that you can stack up gradually as you go, because I mean this is baseload energy that you're talking about. So if you are going to start up, and Namibia is one of those countries that are so blessed in so many ways.
Yeah.
Land itself, the desert, you can easily set up, you know, these modular plants in the desert somewhere, you know, out of reach of anybody, and produce our own energy gradually. You start off with a small one, you take them up gradually. Tomorrow, Namibia can become an energy exporter, but then also Namibia can also attract manufacturers and people that want to set up plants. You can come here. We have a port. We have Africa Port. We've got Luderitz Port. You can set up your operation there. You produce stuff. You can export them out immediately. But with the limited energy that we have now, I think it also limits Namibia as a country to produce things and to build things. That's why we think if we are the third largest producer in the world and we still have enough resource to last us probably a lifetime, then I think it's really an energy source that we need to embark on.
Interesting. Mr. Andreas, let's ask, just how long does it take to come up with an uranium plant?
Man, I am not a uranium expert to that extent. But it takes a while, depending now on, I see now these uranium companies, they sort of have this off the shelf, modular plants so that they can quickly set up the smaller ones. So the bigger ones obviously take years, can take 5 to 7 years. But the smaller ones, can take probably, I tend to be corrected, 2 years. You can then gradually, you know, increase capacity as you go, as the demand increases. Let's say you start off with 300 megawatts, and then if there's more demand, then you increase it with another 300 megawatts, and so it goes. So yeah, that's about 5 to 7 years for a big one, but for smaller ones, much shorter period.
Yeah, maybe just to look at in terms of priorities. One economist, I think Sarah Mohey, indicated that Namibia we jump from one project to another without completing anything. Do you think it's a matter of now prioritizing, or we can achieve both projects that we have? Because remember, now we have green hydrogen, we have oil and gas. Now we are also having uranium plant. Do you think what is your view in terms of that, particularly when you are dividing energy?
Thank you, Mr. Shombe.
Yeah.
I think we need to run Namibia like a business.
Okay.
And then we need to pay attention to, yes, there's oil and gas, there's green hydrogen, then there's uranium. But then we need to weigh the benefits of each of these projects. The green hydrogen, for example, you know, what are the benefits that are directly linked to Namibia? And looking at Namibia itself as a country, what are the things that we need urgent intervention that need urgent corrective action.
Mm.
And the oil discovery. I mean, when we come to the oil discovery, I think the question there is, to what extent is Namibia as a country involved in the production of the oil?
Mm.
No, with the oil, we sort of in a position where we have to rely on these foreign companies that came in that, you know, have to set up, you know, all these things until we come into production. I don't think there's any much work that Namibia has to do with it, other than giving the platform for those entities to come in and operate and bring the oil into production.
Mm.
For uranium, for example, we export some of our energy from our neighboring country.
Yeah.
We generate some of our power from Rakana, from the hydropower station.
Mm-hmm.
But we can also see the trend of this now. A lot of operations coming online that require a lot of energy, and Namibia is unable to provide that energy.
Indeed.
So what is that urgent item that we need? I think Namibia needs urgently energy.
Mm-hmm.
Namibia needs to sort out their water.
Yeah.
And Namibia also needs to sort out our human capital, productivity.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the three things that we as a country, after all the blessings that we received from God, natural resources, blessings, we've got a port, we've got a desert, we've got the land, we've got good weather, we've got all the natural resources. We, as the people of Namibia, need to sort out those three things.
Mm-hmm.
The energy, the water, and the capacity of the people. And green hydrogen, does it really solve our problem?
Yeah.
You know, like immediate problem that we have, our challenges that we have currently.
So it's a matter of prioritizing.
We need to rank. We need to prioritize. We need to rank. And if I was to rank now, I would say, yes, the oil and gas is up there.
Yeah.
But that's out of our hands.
Mm.
And I think that's in good hands, and we have created that platform.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I will put uranium a second, because we need to sort out our energy security quickly, and we can also be probably one of, you know, and the market is good. All the countries in the world are pushing towards nuclear energy now, because everybody is trying to have that energy security going forward.
All right.
Indeed. Mr. Lysias Pius, thank you so much for making time for us and sharing those insights with us. I do appreciate your time with us.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll definitely engage more in future as well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And of course, let's pause right here. Shortly take a trip to the marketplace. We're coming back right now. My colleague David Shombe signs out at this point.
Yes, thank you, Juju, and see you around.
Okay.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know. know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And we are back. You are still tuned into On the Reading News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Now, joining me in studio still to talk about uranium as it's becoming an emerging trade commodity is Mr. Mika Munepapa. And he is the senior economist at the national accounts at the Namibia Statistics Agency. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Mika, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for having me.
Mm. Yes. Having reviewed the recently released Namibia Statistics Bulletin for the month of November 2025 reveals that uranium has emerged as it's a commodity. I'm so sorry.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USAID stores? 4 kilograms real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only 199.99 Namibian dollars. 10 kilograms of Champion Super Maize Meal, only 104.99 Namibian dollars. Wellington tomato sauce, just 25.99 Namibian dollars. And pay 194.99 Namibian dollars for 1 liter Bonita Long Life Milk. You save where good food costs less.
Okay, pardon me about that. I overlooked that scheduled commercial break. Are you still there? Okay, cool. Yeah. So now, uranium continues to be one of Namibia's most strategic export commodities, and of course, is playing a critical role in our country's trade performance and global energy relevance. Kindly just get into this for us, since you are dealing with the statistics yourself.
All right. Thank you very much for the question. Just like you said, uranium has been really picking up lately. It's not just in the previous year, that is 2025. It has started picking up since the prices in the international market has become very favorable for the uranium global market. I think that was from the year 2023 where we have really started seeing the prices of the uranium picking up. And over the years to date, it has been really fluctuating, and at some point it has really hit $80 per barrel. So it is favorable. So of course now you will tend to see that the producers in Namibia, they will try to take advantage of that. But nonetheless, there are also some factors that are really driving that. The increase in the exports. Some of them, you have seen that crop rotation, they are really picking up. And so most of the country, they want to really position themselves very well. Whether it comes to clean energy or just some nuclear powers. So uranium is one of the input into those. So countries, they are really trying to take advantage our companies here locally are trying to take advantage of that high prices to make sure that they also capitalize on that.
Mm.
So that's why you have been seeing that a surge in production, in export as well as in production within Namibia.
Mm. Interesting. How do you think this positions Namibia, considering that this, of course, it's not just recently, but has been a thing of so. How do you think it positions Namibia in terms of maybe investor confidence as well?
Okay, in terms of investor confidence, I think time will tell. Investors look at various factors. Of course, if the price, the high price persists, Of course, you might tend to see some investor, but analysts will be in a better position to tell us that. From the statistic point of view, of course, we have been monitoring that, and so far for the year 2025, we have seen that the production has really picked up, especially in the first two quarters of 2025, although there was a bit of a slowdown in the third quarter, and we are yet to see the overall picture of how it performed in 2025. And I'm sure, yes, investors are really looking into all those various sectors that really, I mean, like that will inform them whether it will be a good position, I mean, decision for them to move to Namibia to increase in terms of investment. And also, if we have a lot of, uranium still remaining in the ground. So, of course, like I said, the analyst will be in a better position to really kind of provide more context to that.
Indeed. Okay. And another thing, Mr. Mika, China and France, of course, remain Namibia's key uranium export destinations. Do you think perhaps there are other, not necessarily think, but let me get it right from you, because you have the statistics with you. Would you say what other countries perhaps are also emerging to be potentially places where uranium is exported to from Namibia?
Okay, in terms of uranium in Namibia, of course, China is one of the main ones that we export to and all that. But maybe to get to you the countries that we are exporting to, that I will have to get back to you, like when I get a list for you, and really just to kind of detail out what is the volume that we are exporting to every country that I don't have at my disposal right now.
No problem. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, are they among those, of course, you might not have everything right now at your disposal, which is okay, but among those countries, which other ones, which countries perhaps are we exporting to that are definitely using uranium for electricity, let's say? Do you perhaps know?
Not at this point.
Sorry. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, but otherwise, as statistics have revealed, what do you say more, in terms of us, of uranium now emerging, over diamonds, and what factors could be contributing to that?
All right. In terms of, uranium replacing or becoming now a major commodity.
Yeah.
Since all along, diamond has really been dominating. That, again, I think time will tell. Like we said, diamond is a luxury good. And sometimes, when the prices is too high and there is some, other commodities that can be consumed instead of it, you tend to see that consumer will go to the best alternative, and that's what we have been seeing over the recent times when the lab-grown diamond has been produced, and then consumers, because there's no much differentiation between the two, especially from the consumer side, so the prices of the lab-grown diamond is a little bit lower compared to the original stone. So, like I said, it's a luxury good, so consumers tend to go to the best alternative, and that's what we have been seeing. However, about uranium replacing now the diamond as a main commodity, again, that time will really tell, although diamond has been performing poorly in the recent period, in terms of contribution to the economy, diamond still remains slightly above the uranium, although uranium has really been picked up like massively in the recent time, but time will tell. Whether we'll see now diamond becoming one of the major minerals that our country will have to depend on, just like what the diamond has been contributing towards the Namibian economy.
Interesting. Interesting. My colleague David Chombe says that minerals don't stay there forever. So in other words, some come and replace it, and so things change. So yeah, we'll see, I guess, with time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. Mr. Mika, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Okay, so. And that was Mr. Mika Munepapa. He is the Senior Economist, National Account at the Namibia Statistics Agency. Now, of course, in 2025, uranium maintained its position among Namibia's top three export commodities, that is according to NSA, and the November 2025 trade balance shows that uranium emerged as the second most exported commodity, accounting for 19.9% of total exports, narrowly trailing non-monetary gold, which led with 21.1%. Now, market indicators heading into 2026 further underline uranium's growing importance. Commodity price data from January 2026 positions uranium as one of the strongest performing commodities in the current market cycle, with prices having increased by more than 145% over the past decade. Now, this surge reflects renewed global investment in nuclear energy as countries seek reliable low carbon power sources. And that's just what Mr. Mika was actually pointing out to us. Now, from an international trade perspective, China and France remain Namibia's key uranium export destinations. And according to the World Nuclear Association, China's long-term uranium strategy is built on a three-part model, producing one-third domestically and securing one-third through foreign equity and joint ventures abroad, and sourcing the remaining third from the open market. Now, this strategy places uranium-producing countries such as Namibia in a strategically adventurous position. In other words, investor confidence, we will tell with time also. Now, global uranium demand countries to rise sharply. Demand stood at over 11,000 tons of uranium, that is TU, in 2023, and is projected to increase to more than 40,000 tons of uranium by 2040, driven largely by nuclear expansion in developed and emerging economies. Now, in 2026, global, which is we're just getting in here, global demand is expected to remain on a firm growth trajectory as countries deepen their commitment to nuclear energy for energy security and climate targets. Energy expert Mary Peters cautions, however, that Namibia's approach to uranium must go beyond export revenues alone, right? Namibia's approach to uranium must go beyond export revenues alone. And I quote, Namibia must not focus solely on finance, but rather on building sustainable projects while uranium is still available before the world squeezes every metric ton from the ground, Peters said. She argues that the establishment of a domestic uranium processing or energy plant is long overdue and could yield long-term benefits for Namibia's energy sector and industrial base. And I quote, global leaders in uranium production are not Iran, Russia, China, or the United States, but Canada and Namibia. That alone should tell us why it is critical to prioritize domestic mineral utilization before resources are depleted, Peters added. Now, the macroeconomic level, the Economic Association of Namibia projects economic growth of around 3% in 2026, describing it as stabilizing but insufficient to address deep structural challenges. Now, this level of growth helps keep the economy moving forward, but is not transformative. It will not significantly reduce unemployment or poverty on its own. No, job creation, diversification, and skills development remain central challenges. That is according to the Economic Association of Namibia. Now, in this context, uranium represents both an opportunity and a test. Now, while Namibia remains the third largest uranium producer globally, the country's long-term economic gains will depend on value addition, beneficiation, and market diversification rather than continued reliance on raw export alone. Now, Namibia is currently home to three major uranium mines. That is the Langer, Hake, Henrich, and the Rosing, and the Husab, positioning the country as a critical player in the global nuclear fuel supply chain. How Namibia leverages this position in 2026 and beyond may prove decisive for its economic resilience and energy future. Now, of course, if you are interested in this conversation or reading up more on this particular story on uranium, please do head over to our not our podcast session, which I was almost about to say, but please do subscribe for the Villager e-paper. That is by sending us a text message on 081-200-4144 so you can subscribe and receive tri-weekly dose of social and economic news. That is the Villager e-paper is out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That is free social and economic news. This particular story is in the Villager e-paper written by my colleague David Chombe. Now, of course, let's pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. You are tuned into On The Radar News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. We go beyond the news and try to get in depth of what it actually means and get expert analysis on it to make a commentary on that. Now, of course, we pause here. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Should you be interested in sharing a comment or asking a question? I repeat that slowly. 083-288-401. I'll see you after the commercial break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nukumuna oijabo ili nawa Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora satu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko derewa bora hetatu natu bali o hetatu hatatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Special admission consideration undergraduate applicants. UNO invites eligible Namibian applicants to apply for special admission consideration for selected undergraduate degree programs for 2026. That is applies to applicants who narrowly missed standard admission requirements but meet the specified point threshold and subject criteria. Now, admission under this category is conditional and students must meet set academic conditions by the end of the year to continue their studies. Special admission does not apply to professional or diploma programs. Details are available from the Office of the Registrar, that is the University of Namibia. And now for some economic indicators before we get to news beyond the borders of Namibia. $1 today is equals to 15.90 Namibian dollars, and $1 is equals to 11.14 Namibian dollars. 1 Swiss franc is equals to 20.71 Namibian dollars. 1 euro is equals to 19.07 Namibian dollars. £1 sterling is equals to 21.90 Namibian dollars. And 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1.22 Namibian dollars. That is $1.22. Now let's move over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. We always start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, international news comes your way. Meanwhile, in South Africa, Hawks has arrested 5 suspects in 12 million fraud scam. Let's take a listen.
An early morning raid, netting 5 suspects. The Hawk says the suspects face charges of fraud, theft and money laundering, dating back to between 2015 and 2018. This relates to a Kabega-based construction company that expanded its business to Cape Town.
A mother company that wanted to expand its own company to Western Cape. So they've established another sister company in the Western Cape, whereby they've employed a legitimate quantity surveyor who is qualified. Apparently, the very same surveyor is the one that orchestrated these fictitious transactions, claiming some money on behalf of some subcontractors that he identified.
Aged between 37 and 59 years old, and were arrested at various residences in Salt River, Strand, Mornington and Ravensmead.
This suspect, they're appearing now today here at Western Cape Court related to the charges of alleged fraud, about 66 counts of fraud and 66 counts of money laundering.
Investigations continue. Vanessa Puna, SABC News, Cape Town.
Meanwhile, in regards to tourism, South Africa has recorded over 10 million visitors in 2025.
Cape Town is fast becoming one of the most attractive holiday destinations in the world. Both local and international tourists are drawn to the mother city throughout the year by her fair weather and various popular attractions, including Robben Island, Table Mountain and Cape Point, and the record-breaking figure of more than 11 million two-way passengers who traveled through Cape Town International Airport during 2025 is a strong sign of a booming tourism sector. A festive season record was also achieved when around 1 million passengers traveled through the airport during the month of December alone.
At the success we've had,
the city of Cape Town says the increased visitor numbers are a strong signal indicating that coordinated efforts between government and the aviation industry is delivering improved results. Visiting Table Mountain and riding the cable car up and down the mountain is one of the most popular activities for tourists. And visitor number, some domestic and international tourists also shared why they chose to visit Cape Town. The city of Cape Town says the continued growth in the tourism sector will provide a massive boost for economic growth in the city, helping to create more jobs and improve livelihoods for locals. Corbin August, SABC News, Cape Town.
And I'll talk on the role of tourism in economic growth.
Just live now to talk about this. Minister, good evening to you and thank you so much for your time. So, some are describing this as a slow recovery, while others say these numbers, in fact, are telling the story of a resilient sector. Perhaps let's start there.
Yes, Bongwe, we are not recovering anymore. We are growing. And with the 10.48 million visitors that we've received in 2025, We are already 2.6% more than the 2019 figures. But this is not by coincidence. It is because we have partnered with the tourism private sector, and we have developed a tourism growth partnership plan that was approved by Cabinet recently. And also on top of that, we have put more focus on making it easier, easy access for tourists by the Home Affairs leading with the electronic travel authorization visa. That is a real game changer, and it's also an enabler for us to grow the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, Cabinet also approved a tourism destination marketing, a route development to get more flights to come to our country. And together with the policy selections that we've done, we are certain that tourism policy is economic policy. Tourism sits at the center of investment. We have developed a tourism infrastructure investment projects, more than eight, worth more than 1 billion. We have also have had our first investment summit that we will be repeating this year. And of course, you know, the whole issue of digital transformation and the impact of technology and AI on tourism. South Africa has got an AI road framework whereby it is the role and responsibility of government to provide connectivity to all, to bridge the digital divide. And while government is rolling all out of this, it also assists and helps tourism to grow even further.
And this, I want to stay with the Tourism Growth Partnership Plan because it really speaks a lot to some of the issues. I mean, I think about what you've just said, access. Yes. I also think about air connectivity, for example, because the G20 Tourism Working Group was speaking about this issue of air connectivity. Are we likely to going to be seeing new routes, and by when are we going to be seeing these?
We have already seen a number of new routes. For instance, Qantas from Australia is now flying directly from Perth to South Africa. And as we know, a number of South Africans live in Perth. We have seen Air France increasing their frequency. Also on the domestic front, we've seen flights South Air also connecting more domestic flights. So yes, there's definitely a growth, and it's that growth in the airlift and the air access strategy is helping up to drive demand. But I will be the first one to admit, Bongwe, that we've still got a lot more work to do. Cabinet approved the plan, and now it is for us to work together with the private sector, Department of Tourism, the aviation sector, to even make sure that we get more direct flights to South Africa. Tourists don't always like to connect flights, and therefore direct flights to South Africa is so important for us.
And you speak about the work that still needs to be done. Something really comes to my mind right now. Just recently, we saw the floods, right? We saw them in Mpumalanga, in Limpopo, and we saw what happened at the Kruger and what they've had to deal with there as far as even the numbers and the bookings are concerned. How are you working around this? Because the weather is becoming an issue, and it seems to be something that we cannot avoid.
Climate change is real, and therefore in government, we have to make sure that we overlay all our decisions that we are making with the impact of climate change. Of course, we want to pass our condolences to all the South Africans that have lost their lives. But again, from the Department of Tourism, we have made available our EPWP budget to help with the cleaning up and the mopping up. And so we will be helping both public and private sector establishments with the cleanup. The Kruger National Park has also started raising funding for the recovery, because we have worked together with all of those affected tourists to either get them alternative safari lodge experience that they can have, And in future, we have to be more prepared for what we've seen with the floods now affecting tourism in a big time. But we've been able to mitigate the impact of the floods on our tourist arrivals.
Now, I know we've earned some bragging rights, right, as South Africa, being named the best destination in Africa 2025 is no small feat. Let's speak about this particular development and the economic spin-offs.
You know, over and above that, I've just returned from Davos. And there the whole World Economic Forum selected South Africa to host the Spring Davos in 2027. It will bring heads of states, policymakers, captains of industry together. And that is that we are still riding on the wave of the success of the G20, where we have illustrated and demonstrated that we are capable to host these kinds of business events. Business events is part of the tourism growth strategy. We have invested money for the year of 2026. We put in a bid or bids for 91 events. So far, we have been successful with 51 events all over South Africa. That shows confidence in our country, but also with the major investment of the French luxury tourism brand Club Med. That will be opening up in Durban in June this year. That shows that the 2.5 billion rand invested through a public-private partnership, that even investors has got confidence. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I also want to use the opportunity to congratulate KwaZulu-Natal. Durban has returned to its rightful spot, and they have received more than 1.2 million tourists just over the festive season.
Sure.
So it's a really a sector that is now growing because we are past the recovery stage of COVID-19. I don't want to hear the word COVID-19 anymore.
Yeah, it's gone. And quickly, before I let you go, these figures, right, when we look at them, we know what the U.S. president has been saying about the country, the posture that is, and you speak about investors. Does it tell us that this didn't have an impact at all?
It didn't have an impact at all, Bongwe. You know, tourism is not affected by tariffs. But what we've seen, especially with the hostility between ourselves and the United States of America, that in the month of August and September, that the arrivals coming from the United States of America actually more visitors came compared to the UK visitors. And I personally think that many of those Americans wanted to come and see, you know, is there real genocide here? What is this country all about? So it didn't have an impact on tourists at all. And in fact, it has assisted us to grow the American market.
Minister, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for talking to
us. Thank you, Bongwe.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That was the tourism minister there, Patricia de Lille.
Let's cross over now to Zambia as Zambia's government moves on constituency solar rollout.
The Constituency Development Fund, CDF, has come in handy in delivering health facilities, desks and bursaries in the education sector. Another component has now been added to CDF to support the energy diversification mix. Local Government and Rural Development Permanent Secretary in charge of technical services, Nicholas Piri, has hinted on the groundbreaking of the Presidential Constituency Energy Initiative 312 megawatt solar project.
The procurement process for the 312 megawatts of solar energy plants is underway, and this process will be concluded very soon, within the course of next month. We are optimistic and determined that before the end of February, we should be able to do a groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of 2 megawatts per constituency solar plant.
Mr. Piri says local authorities that have more than one constituency, like Lusaka City Council with 7 constituencies, will have one 14 megawatts plant. And Mr. Piri told journalists at a media briefing in Lusaka that government will clear all outstanding payment for cash for work beneficiaries before the start of phase 2 of the project.
Total amount of 2.8 million has already been released and disbursed already to the beneficiaries in Lusaka, and we are going progressively reduce the deficit, which is currently standing at about 119 million.
Mr. Piri also disclosed that 32 constituencies achieved 100% utilization of CDF that was allocated to them. He said the Ministry of Local Government disbursed over 5.2 billion kwacha to constituencies last year, and CDF utilization for 2025 is at 86% against the funds. Mary Kachepa, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Also in Zambia, Zambia sees a surge in mineral production.
Performance of the mining sector in 2025, with copper continuing to dominate the sector's output. Copper production rose to 80% last year from 825,513 metric tons to 890,345 metric tons. And for the Minister of Mines, the growth is a significant step towards attaining the 3 million metric tons production by 2031.
The increase in copper production was predominantly attributed to the increase in production output at Konkola Copper Mines, Mopani, Kansanshi, Lubambe Mines. Now, I want to make a note here. When you look at the mining tenements that have been announced as having a significant increase in the copper output, these are tenements that we've brought into production. And that is why I was talking about the leadership of President Hakainde Hichilema. KCM was in comatose, it was dead. In fact, as a nation, by the time Vedanta was coming back, KCM was on care and maintenance. Mopani, same story. Lubambe, we just introduced a new investor who is doing now 2 more shafts at the mine, which also has contributed to increasing the output of copper.
2025 also witnessed major investments such as the $600 million Sinoma Mine Kitumba Resources and the FQM Kansanshi S3 expansion project.
Also, when you talk about Kansanshi, you realize the president was at some point, which I'll mention later in the speech, commissioning the S3 expansion project. So you can see that probably as media personnel, as the press, I'm already even answering your question as to how this productivity has gone up.
On illegal mining, government is speaking tough, warning all illegal miners to vacate gold mine sites in Impika. He said 673 cooperatives have been trained to promote safer mining and reduce loss of life. Mr. Kabuswe said the achievements recorded in the mining sector are a clear indication that the good policies government has put in place are working. Tamara Mswala, ZNBC News in Kasama.
Meanwhile, Angola's Lobito Atlantic Railway stalled project secures multi-billion dollar funding deal.
Investment is gathering pace for one of Africa's most ambitious trade corridors. $753 million in loans has been secured for the Lobito Atlantic Railway. Most of the funding comes from the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation, but African backing is also firmly part of the deal, with $200 million thrown in the ring from the Development Bank of Southern Africa.
International investors are important, be it from China or from Western countries, but African investors, they understand the local peculiarities. They understand some of the issues around risk locally. So they even give comfort to international financiers when they work hand in hand together to syndicate deals.
The 1,300-kilometer rail corridor is the shortest and most strategic route linking the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia, and Angola to international markets, enabling the export of critical minerals from Central Africa's copper belt, key components for the global green transition and Africa's own development.
These governments will be encouraged to really do the best that they can to ensure, firstly, it is not just a corridor of shipping out commodities out of the African continent in the raw form, but you do beneficiation process along the way. You also ensure, and you rightly put it, develop industrial and ensure that there is a development along the corridors, and they shouldn't just be corridors to facilitate external benefit, in this case, the Western world.
We cannot continue being a continent that sends cheap minerals out and bring in finished products. We should be developing those products right here in Africa, because when we do that, we create jobs for everyday Africans. We give create opportunity. We create businesses. But we are also able to improve our own development.
The deal marks a turning point for a project that has long struggled to move beyond incremental upgrades, but also signals a shift in the broader relationship between the United States and Africa. Tensions have been high following President Donald Trump's return to the Oval Office and his decision to cut aid to the continent.
It might open the doors to other investments. However, it does not bring to an end the existing tensions. Since there are economic activities taking place, that in itself is good enough to ensure that negotiations can continue. Hopefully that those negotiations will really bring a turnaround and reset of the relationship under President Donald Trump.
The revival of the Lobito Corridor comes amid a scramble from Western nations to secure alternative mineral supply routes that bypass traditional bottlenecks. Total investment now stands at more than $6 billion, positioning Lobito as both a geopolitical and economic trump card for Southern and Central Africa. Julie Shara, CGTN, Cape Town.
Meanwhile, Cote d'Ivoire seeks solutions to cocoa surplus as farmer anger grows.
In Cote d'Ivoire, a crisis continues to shake up the country's vital cocoa industry. In Yakase Atobro, in the eastern Adzobe region, tons of this brown gold wait to be bought. Local traders are unable to sell it due to the government and its traditional buyers running out of cash. Even when it does agree to buy some, farmers don't always get paid right away and must wait.
We still haven't found a solution, and it's difficult for us farmers. The part that hurts me the most is the health aspect. When you're sick and in hospital, you can't say, I've weighed my cocoa, I'm waiting for the money, so treat me on credit. At the pharmacy, you can't show your cocoa weighing receipt to get medicine. So I'm asking the President of the Republic and the government to think about the farmers.
Farmers are angry. The situation is untenable for many. Like Asikosu Francois, who owns several cocoa fields after being in the business for 20 years. Since November last year, she has sold 1.5 tons of cocoa but is yet to receive a penny.
The product has now been stored in my buyer's shop for 2 months. I was given a receipt after the sale, but 2 months later, I still haven't received a penny. I am relying heavily on this money to pay for my children's school fees.
While the authorities plan a crisis meeting to address the situation, Francois is not optimistic.
Yes, I heard they will be holding a meeting today about our case. That's good. But we need to be realistic. What will happen afterwards? They will make a decision, but will it be implemented in practice? No, I don't think so. I have my doubts.
Livelihoods of more than 1,000 members of an agricultural cooperative in Yakase Atobro want to see a solution fast.
We need to have funds available. Often, a farmer has put his cocoa on the ground and it is not yet dry, but his child is sick, or sometimes he himself is sick. But if we have funds available, we can give advances to producers to tide them over until the bank pays. So honestly, I'm asking the government for help for our producers.
La campagne principale 2025-2026.
The main 2025-2026 campaign is taking place against a backdrop of high volume mobilization and peak transport to the usual collection, storage, processing, and export channels. This dynamic, combined with certain logisticals and port constraints, has caused temporary slowdowns in the removal of the produce from marketing in some areas. In addition, the sector is facing increased pressure from cross-border flows from neighboring countries where farm gate prices are lower than those in our country.
The government blames the situation on a drop in prices on the international market. Officials, however, say they are setting aside some money to begin payments for the cocoa. Beryl Oro, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's oil demand supply imbalance raises questions about energy transition.
Latest data from Nigeria's downstream regulator show imported petrol continues to dominate domestic supply. In December 2025, imports made up 57% of fuel consumed nationwide. That's about 42 million liters every day. Local refineries, led by Dangote, supply the remaining 43%, roughly 32 million liters.
There is a continuous demand for the product, not just in Nigeria, but around the West Africa region. So the need for constant importation and the market for it is always available.
Even with our production, we've not been able to meet up beyond the OPEC demand to actually have a feedstock that's supplied to the local refineries for them to have enough distance to refine.
The figures run against expectations that growing refining capacity would sharply cut imports. Analysts say fuel shipments are influenced by reserve levels and strong regional demand. They also point to transportation and logistics, factors that can make imported fuel cheaper than locally refined supplies.
When you look at the production cost of our local refineries, they seem to be almost at par or higher than that of importation. When you check the factors of production in the country, I mean, what it takes to both in terms of the production costs, in terms of the haulage cost, in terms of other political and macroeconomic indices within the country.
Policymakers say boosting domestic refining is central to reducing fuel imports and protecting foreign reserves. But industry players argue that until crude supply to refineries become more reliable and transport networks improve, imports will remain part of Nigeria's fuel mix.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Now, remember, should you be interested in listening to this conversation, again, head over to our podcast session. All you have to do is download the Eagle FM app. From Indafa, happy as usual, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place, same radio frequency as you tackle yet another issue. Goodbye.